Hello and welcome to Diary of a Common Man. My name is Salim Lalani. Thank you for joining me once again and thank you so much for supporting my work so far. In the last episode, we discussed His Highness Sir Sultan Muhammad Shah's early life, his British connections and his women. In this episode, we will discuss how he revived the dying Nizari movement with the creation of this amazing system. We learned earlier that His Highness's grandfather, Aga Khan I, was a British pensioner. His father, Aga Khan II, Aga Ali Shah, inherited that pension, and so did His Highness himself in his younger days. So how did His Highness, a pensioner, became one of the richest men in the world? In a nutshell, he was a genius and he also had a Midas's touch. He created this amazing system which brought him a fortune, which was further compounded by the financial impact of the Industrial Revolution. Industrial Revolution changed the world as we knew it. Machines took over human labor. Transport, banking, communications, health, almost all aspects of human life were revolutionized. Consumerism was born, and consumerism brought personal wealth to many people around the world. Common people began accumulating wealth. His Highness's followers were no exception. Although Industrial Revolution began in Great Britain in the middle of 18th century, the financial impact of it arrived in Asia in the beginning of 20th century. Below graph is on page 73 of Explorations in Economic History. In this age of prosperity, His Highness happened to be the Nizari Imam, who received religious dues on a percentage basis. Inflated incomes meant inflated religious revenues for His Highness. But there could be no doubt that His Highness became rich not because of the Industrial Revolution and the impact of it, but because he created this revolutionary system that made him rich. System that made followers pay more, much, much more than his ancestors. But how did he manage that? How did his system work? Let's have a look. To say His Highness's system, his invention, was complex is an understatement, gross understatement. We will need multiple episodes to unravel it, and we will. But before we conclude this episode, let's at least get an overview of the various components of the system. First component was a Ginanic tradition. We learned earlier that Nizari Pirs composed Ginans, the devotional literature or devotional songs, to convert Hindus to Nizarism. These Ginans were always the foundation of the system, but His Highness applied psychological techniques to ensure that his followers were completely consumed by the ideas contained in the Ginans. And what were these ideas? His Highness is an incarnation of God, and he owns a share of their incomes, and if the followers were not to share that income, their souls will not be freed. Let's look at a couple of examples. This Ginan is in relation to his divinity. Jampu Deep Mahe Sami Takat Rachaya Te Shreshtna Sirjanhar. This means, in the Indian subcontinent, the Lord has established His throne. He is indeed the creator of the universes. This Ginan was written by Pir Imam Shah. Second one on divinity. Eji Partak Patra ne Parkhi ne Preme Pujo ne Paaye Chaud Brahman no e Dhani Pargat Che Jugmae. This means, having recognized the manifest form, that is the Imam of the time, worship Him with love. He is indeed the creator of the 14 universes, and he lives in Iran. Ginan on the son, Sadgur padharya tame jagjo, eji nur Sadgur bole vinti. Sambhalo gat jamaj ji, dason dejo apna gurmukhe, to utarso pehle par. Sachi sukrit laine chaljo, nahi to padso lak chorasi mahe. This means, Nur Sadgur has uttered this entreaty. So listen, O community, O congregation. If you pay the dason to your guide, you will be delivered across to the other side. That is, you will be set free salvation. Go forth with true deeds, for otherwise you fall into the 84 lakhs. 84 lakhs means 84 lakh or 8400,000 rebirths. Next Ginan on the dason. Tare dasond no mandyo devakar jene thi chutore. Which means, at the time the giver, that is the divine giver, establish the dason, by observance of which you will be set free. There are many, many such ginans available on the internet. There are many websites you can go to which contains these kind of ideas, and people are proactively spreading these ideas. One of the best ones is ismaili.net, and there's a treasure there if you'd like to read. Now, His Highness would not rely on the ginans. His strategy was much, much deeper than only spreading the ideas about the ginans. He will now make farmans himself. Being the authority according to the ginans, this authority will make certain commands to his followers. Let us look at this particular farman, which is available in this book called Kalam-e-Imam-e-Mubin, and this is farman number 18. And in this farman, His Highness Imam Sultan Muhammad Shah particularly addresses his followers and narrates this particular story to demonstrate how Maula Ali was God and how he is God. His Highness says, one day Maula Ali went to the bank of River Furat on his horse. He reached a community of Ali Allah. Members of this community believed Maula Ali was Allah. Ali called one member of the community and inquired, "Do you say I am Allah?" And the member said, "I have faith, you are Allah." Thereupon Maula Ali beheaded that man and brought him back to life and asked, "Why do you call me Allah?" And the man said, "You killed me and then brought me back to life. Now, whatever doubt I had has been thrown out. You are truly Allah." Maula Ali ordered that the person be cut into several pieces and thrown from a mountain. The order of Ali was carried out and the man was brought back to life. And Maula Ali asked him again, "Do you still call me Allah?" Thereupon, the person very obediently said, "My faith has become even more stronger. The one who can cut a person into so many pieces and then can bring him back to life can only be Allah." Narrating this, His Highness addressed the Jamaat and he said, "The member was killed many times and in many styles, and every time brought back to life, he was asked, 'Do you yet call me Allah?' And the person kept on saying, 'You are truly Allah.'" The next farman was made at Dar es Salaam on 29th of September in 1899. "Those who understand my farmans will taste the sweetness. However, if you don't follow them, you will face difficulties. In hell, red hot hammers will be struck on your head. you will scream for help and say, I repent, I repent. And hot hammers will be struck day and night. This one was made at Bombay on 4th of April 1908. His Highness says, you must follow my firmans without ifs and buts. Why did I say what did you say is not for you to say. If I say it's a night, you say it is night. If I say it is a day, you say it is a day. You must follow your Imam's intellect. Root of human intellect is also Imam's intellect. To use your intellect against Imam's order is not required. So much for the intellectual tradition that Aga Khanis talk about. His Highness even gave a farman for people like me in Jamnagar on 9th of April 1900. He said, during Maula Ali's imamad, there were people who gave him an oath of allegiance and then they retracted it. These were bad people. But there can be no doubt that my favorite farman was made in Bombay on 27th of April 1891. And Maula says, on the day of judgment, six categories of people will be considered sinners and will receive extreme punishment. First, person who did not worship God, even if he forgot doing so once in his lifetime. Second, person who has not given the religious dues. Third is a person who has consumed alcohol. Even if he has taken one drop of it, did not repent and die. Fourth, person who took interest on loans from his fellow brothers. Fifth, person who ill-treated his parents. Sixth, person who has spoken ill of others or has discussed worldly matters at the place of worship. Social club. Okay. Aga Khan was God, but that was nothing new. His Iranian ancestors were also God. He wanted to share his followers' income and so did his ancestors. But here is where His Highness changed the whole game. In return for the money, he wanted to give something to the followers. Guess what could he have given to the followers? He gave them a club for entertainment. He converted the place of worship into a club. Music, dance, food, picnic, cultural shows, opportunities to socialize, opportunities to display their wealth, opportunities to display their prestige, the titles, opportunity to display the beauty, and opportunity to display the latest fashion. It is this club that draws most people today and in Imam Sultan Muhammad Shah's time to Jamaat Khanas. I said most people because there are followers, and I know those followers myself, some of them that is, who genuinely go to Jamaat Khana to worship Aga Khan. But majority, a vast majority of people go for other purposes, as I described earlier. And don't get me wrong, I am not against the club. I think having fun, being happy, dancing, music is a good thing. Not only is it a good thing, it is necessary for a happy life. And the Imam should take some credit for it. My problem with the club is only one, and that is the club is sold as a place of worship. Establishing the club would not satisfy His Highness. He would now attract financially rich people, educated people, influential people, and politically inclined people into his system. They would be nominated to leadership positions and showered with titles. These titles would give them prestige in the community. The community was now divided forever between elites, title holders, and the commoners. Title holders would be prestigious members of the community, and they would not miss a chance to display that prestige. But it would be these elites that would play an extremely important role for His Highness. They would actually run the whole show for His Highness. Commoners who aspired to become elites would now assist in running the show. And this set off a political cycle in motion. People pleasing, favoritism, backstabbing became an intrinsic part of the whole system, which survives to the day. Anyway, elites and commoners would run the show together. This would be called service to the Imam. Difference is, the elites would receive titles and prestige, and the commoners will receive blessings. The system was now ready, but not watertight. Imam wanted to put walls around the structure to ensure the followers had no chance of escaping. And these walls would not be physical in nature. It would be mental, psychological walls where people's ability to think beyond the Imam or beyond his authority would be taken away. It would be erased. How is this done? We will detail that a little bit later. But that is a prison Imam Sultan Muhammad Shah would build. He would condition them to believe. Condition them to believe, not to know. As we heard earlier in his Farman, it is not your job to think. If I say it's a day, it's a day. If I say it's a night, it's a night. You must believe. You are not required to use your intellect. I will do the thinking. You just do what I say. Believe in my divinity and pay me the share of your income, or else. He designed a conditioning machine which would bind his followers to him. This machine would be called a Recreation Club. That is the name he gave this machine. Later, it became Ismailia Association, and in modern times, it is called ITRAB, which is Ismaili Tariqa and Religious Education Board. This institution, ITRAB, ITREB, is the brain of the whole system. It is here that strategies are designed to brainwash people or indoctrinate children. To discuss the working of the psychological and the mind conditioning aspect of this machine called ITRAB, we will need to invite a professional social psychologist in future episodes. Apart from that, in the future, we will also discuss how psychology drives, a human psychology drives the rituals and the ceremonies in the Jamaat Khana. At this stage, all I would like my viewer to understand is that this magic machine would make people believe in His Highness. In fact, this programming or the conditioning would render the followers so deluded that they believe everyone else is deluded. You will see a lot of examples of this delusion in the comments that I get on my YouTube channel, and I will be dedicating an episode on that as well to demonstrate to you as to how does delusion work. If, say, for example, a commentator has accused me of no knowledge or spreading false information, and if you see in my comments, I invite them, I say to them, okay, I have no knowledge and I am spreading lies. Why don't you come forward and tell us about the correct knowledge or the true knowledge that you have? And guess what? They disappear. That's what happens. And we will cover this in detail because this is the crux of the whole matter. His Highness put in place a system which completely deludes a person. Doesn't matter whether they have been to school or not, or whether they are PhDs or what have you. Everyone will believe. And that is the power of childhood indoctrination, which a social psychologist will talk about in future episodes. Apart from building a mental prison of delusion, His Highness would also install one final layer of security in case somebody wants to escape. And that is called excommunication. Excommunication is an ancient system that is practiced in Hindu societies and many other societies in the world. But His Highness proactively practiced excommunication. Anyone that does not conform to the rules and regulations, speak against the Imam or question him or his institutions would be excommunicated. This term sounds pretty harmless, but it is worse than death. You'd rather die instead of being excommunicated, particularly in Imam Sultan Muhammad Shah's time, not today. I am one example sitting in front of you who was not excommunicated by the Imam. It is me who excommunicated the Imam. But I'm still sitting here and I'm living a normal life, a very happy life and a very secure life. And I wish that I can inspire other people who think like me but are scared of excommunication. And do not be under a misunderstanding that excommunication does not work today or it does not exist today. The form of the excommunication has changed, but it definitely positively exists today. I am an example of it myself, and I will talk about how I was treated after I decided to put videos on YouTube. I will talk about the details of that as to how was I treated by my own community, by my own friends. But that is for another episode. But basically, coming back to excommunication in Imam Sultan Muhammad Shah's time or His Highness's time. Basically, once Imam excommunicates you, you are left to die alone because you become an outcast. Entire community would disconnect with you. They will have no relationships with you, personal or business. Nobody will lend to you if you are a shopkeeper. Nobody will buy from your shop and you will die alone. In modern times, Imam does not outcast anyone. However, the Ismaili constitution has provisions for excommunication in place in case somebody plays up. As we learnt earlier, Ismailis and Nizaris mostly lived under a cloud of persecution throughout the history, except for a couple of occasions. This forced them to live underground. with time, living secretly and in paranoid environments became ingrained in their DNA, and it still is. Living secretly, never coming out to speak openly, is in their DNA. They do not come out if certain questions are asked. They will come out only when good questions are asked. And my viewers on YouTube, I have asked them this question, and not one Aga Khani has answered those questions yet. This is the YouTube viewers, and I don't blame them. Even the scholars, as I said earlier, could not answer one question. What gives Aga Khan the right to claim the ancestry from the Prophet? On what basis? Show me some substance, if not a lot. Show me something. Not one person has come forward. What gives Aga Khan to own the religious dues? Not one person has come forward. What gives Aga Khan the right to encourage and promote the Gnan that calls him God? Not one person has come forward, because it is in their DNA. They will not come forward. And my mission is to open only a few eyes, if not all eyes, only a few eyes, only a few hearts that are still alive. Alive with some conscience. Anyway, before I get too carried away, His Highness revolutionized the tradition of secrecy. Does that mean there would be no longer any secrecy? Guess what? The secrecy would be intensified. It's another matter that he will not hide physically, but he will hide, his imamat will hide behind his institutions, because he will order his institutions to do what he wouldn't do, and that's how he would hide. Apart from that, he would add some more secrecy to different aspects of the system, which we will discuss in future episodes. In fact, secrecy is one of the main reasons of this series. I would like to bring the secrecy out. In fact, if you see my thumbnail, you will see Secret World of Aga Khan. Secrecy is practiced at various levels within the system. A secret place of worship, a secret leader, a secret institutions, secret religious meetings, secret prayers, secret divine word, secret financial transactions, and secret murids. One murid is not allowed to tell the other murid about something else. Secrecy in all levels, and this is not even counting the financial secrecy that is happening outside of the Jamaat Khana, in the sense, where does the money go? How much money is there? We will talk about that also in future episodes. We will delve deeper into at least four components of His Highness's system: Gnanic tradition, indoctrination, excommunication, and secrecy, particularly the financial secrecy and the secrecy that is applied to almost all aspects in the Jamaat Khana. How does it work? We will discuss these things in detail, but not next week. Next week, we will continue exploring the life and times of His Highness Aga Khan III Imam Sultan Muhammad Shah, 48 Nizari Imam. Until then, take care. Goodbye.